Monster Man, Episode 206, Goat and Gorgomira. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we're taking a look at two more monsters from the G chapter of Monster Manual 2, the 1983 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. I say monsters, but the first creature on our list isn't really a monster. Instead, it's a goat. Goats are great. More games should have goats in them. Like, if you go back through the special episodes, way back to the special episode about the pathetic aesthetic, I think goats are an animal that straddles the two schools of Dungeons & Dragons. Well, no, maybe not the two schools of Dungeons & Dragons, but two of the many schools of Dungeons & Dragons. Because goats are both silly and metal. My experience of goats, anyway, which is not all that great, is just that there's something kind of charming about them in their disregard for us. Some goats are affectionate, I know this. Some goats think you have food, and sometimes you do. But in general, they're just kind of like, goats are wryly amused by the folly of humans. And I think that that is a mood that has a place in fantasy adventure role-playing. They're tough and cantankerous, but they're gregarious and fun. And not necessarily lovable, but they're very likable. When 3rd edition came out, everybody got very excited about halflings riding dogs around. And that's fine. But there is also a line of miniatures that has, I want to say Westphalia miniatures, but I could be wrong, that has halfling knights riding around on goats, rather than the more traditional ponies. And I, for one, am into it. I think in the Peter Jackson Battle of Five Armies film, which I haven't seen, everyone says that the dwarves ride goats, but my glance at it suggests that those are in fact sheep. Well, rams, you know, but like bighorn sheep. But so yeah, goats. Goats are pretty great. I don't want to know what the game is where you fight a goat, unless it's that one where you're all sort of like zero-level kids and a farmer has a mean-tempered goat that you have to get past in order to get something out of the barn without getting butted. But I would hate to think of something happening to the poor old goat. As for metal, note, if you will, that the most metal of all deities, the Norse god Thor, had a chariot drawn by two goats, Tooth Gnasher and Tooth Grinder. And he ate them, which was weird, and also one of them had one broken leg, which you'd think would maybe not make it very useful for pulling a chariot, but you know, Thor's loyal like that. He's not gonna sack one of his chariot goats just because it's completely incapable of doing its job. So those are goats. I think they're great. I think they should be in more scenarios. I think more adventurers should have them in their entourages, except you hate to see anything happen to them. The next monster on our list is the Gorgomira. And I try to be positive about every monster in the Monster Manual 2, but I do feel like the Gorgomira is, it's not trying very hard. So one guess where this thing comes from, it is from the Lost Caverns of Tsoikanth, the scenario that introduced a good dozen or two monsters so far in this book. And like a lot of monsters from that collection, it seems to be there to, again, to cater to players who are a little bit jaded. So it's not a Chimera, it's not a Gorgon, so it's not these two monsters from Monster Manual 1 that you might have run into. It's a combination of the two. So instead of the goat head of the Chimera, it has the Gorgon's head. Then that's the Gorgon from Top Sells, The History of Four-Footed Beasts and Monster Manual 1. That is the metallic bull that breathes a poisonous cloud, not like Medusa. Obviously, a metallic bull head that breathes a poisonous cloud and a metallic bull body are, in strictly tactical terms, a significant upgrade for the Gorgomira over the Chimera. But here's the thing, we care about the Chimera, and the Chimera's gimmick is the same as the Gorgomira. So, oh hey, look, it's a bunch of different animals fused together, makes sense to us. Oh hey, look, it's a bunch of different animals fused together, but they're slightly different animals this time, that's, you got diminishing returns there. What that means is that there's nothing wrong with the Gorgomira by itself, but it loses some style points by essentially being a derivative combination of two other monsters. It's a bit like the Dracolisk in that respect, and unless I misremember, the Dracolisk is another monster from the Lost Caverns of Tsoikanth. That is to say that the Dracolisk makes sense from a challenge standpoint, and again, Lost Caverns originally a tournament scenario, though I don't know what the differences are between the tournament version from the 70s and the published version from the early 80s. But like the Dracolisk, the Gorgomira is not as cool as either of the two monsters that it is created from. So a Dracolisk is not as cool as a dragon, no matter how tough it is. And it's also not as cool as a Basilisk, because a Basilisk comes with all this ancient and medieval folkloric bestiary baggage. And what they're both missing is something else that makes them distinctive. The Gorgomira is like a chimera, but it's just tougher. So you've leveled up a bit, and now you're fighting basically a tougher version of the same creature. I think the way you make the Gorgomira work, and actually you say this for the Dracolisk, and for all I know, this is true in the Lost Caverns of Tsoikanth, I think what you do is that you make the combining of different monsters the bit. So you have a dungeon which is being run by some kind of Dr. Moreau type villain whose deal is that they take different monsters and they stitch them together. In fact, you could early on in the campaign have them hire the adventurers to go out and capture monsters for them, you know, because they have a menagerie or whatever. And then you discover like, oh, actually, well, they're trying to, whether that's crossbreed or magically combine or surgically combine different types of monsters together to make some kind of ultimate monster army that they can use to destroy the world. Or they're just like letting their failed experiments get out and rampage through the countryside because, you know, if it's not the ultimate monster, then they don't care about it anymore and they just let it wander off. So I think there's a place for all these kind of weird combination monsters. Like some of the weird trolls from the Fiendfolio, for instance. And for that matter, you could say that this is to do with the origin of these like combined monsters, like the Sphinx or the Chimera. A long time ago, I cited a book by the archaeologist David Wengrow talking about the origin of monsters. And he was arguing that And I'm super oversimplifying here, but basically that as societies began to think of creatures as collections of discrete characteristics rather than as sort of unitary wholes, it became possible to recombine those characteristics and therefore produce monsters. You can say like, well, yeah, when you stop thinking of the thing as a total thing, when you stop thinking of a person as a person and you start thinking about them in terms of like, oh, their labor or their attractiveness or whatever it is that you want to get out of them, then you can start creating monsters. So maybe there is something to be done there with the idea of kind of a cut-up method. It can also be a fun way to actually design monsters, right? Is just take a bunch of different animal or monster parts and, you know, you put them in a big, you know, in an envelope and then you pull them out and you just kind of try and stick them together. It'd be fun if the PCs were in, you know, the chamber where the monster combining machine was. And, you know, every round, Igor throws the big lever and some new combination comes crashing out of the spawning tank. So I think you can make the Gorgomira work and then have an excuse for, like, oh, well, you guys handled that Gorgon without too much difficulty, but what about the Gorgomira? You just have to put it into a context where it makes some kind of setting or narrative sense. And maybe that's the case in the Lost Caverns of Tsoikanth, I don't know. But I think actually like the recombining zoo dungeon can work as long as that's not the dungeon's only gimmick. You know, he still needs some hobgoblin guards or something because otherwise the gag gets repetitive before you get to the final boss fight. So there you go, that's something to do with the Gorgomira. Goats don't need any improvement though. They're fine the way they are. Anyway, in our next episode, we will be continuing our journey through the G chapter of Monster Manual 2. So I hope that you'll join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.